Maboff.
My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. This is Scammapalooza. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au. And if you do enjoy the show, why not leave a review? I've been told by people, if I'm going to do this podcast, then I need to start selling my wares, selling out, selling myself short. And so... two things. Number one, it is Christmas around the corner. My books, Chasing the Ace and Fast and Loose, make fantastic presents. You can find links to them at the website, conman.com.au. They are both fast-paced crime novels about what else but con artists. The other thing is, if that you are having a Christmas party, office, home, pretty much anywhere, I make a fantastic addition to the fun. I do a brilliant keynote presentation about how to become a professional con artist, starting with how to tell a good lie, working right up to how to pull off a long con. It's a lot of fun and a great way to finish up the year. Anyway, that's the end of the sales pitch. On with the show. The Labra Story is a brilliant storytelling night held each month here in Melbourne. Four or five scientists or science fans get together to tell the story of their favourite scientists. In November, I was invited to speak on the scientist that I love the most, and I chose an amateur, a man by the name of Charles Dawson, who was a geologist and a collector in the late 19th and early 20th century. However, being Scammapalooza, there is always a twist in the tale. So strap in and have a listen to the story that I told at Labra Story in front of a live audience. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. This is Scammapalooza.
Nicholas J. Johnson, it's a very proud name, is an author, magician and collector of scams. He exposes tricks and inspires audience to think critically and never be swindled again. After two decades entertaining and educating audiences, he's realised there is much we can learn about persuasion, deception and influence from the world of the professional swindler. Just don't trust him with a deck of cards. Nicholas J. Johnson.
Thank you very much. I have to confess that Nicholas J. Johnson is not my real name. My real name is just Nicholas Johnson. I put the J in the middle because I'm an author and there are a lot of Nicholas Johnsons on Goodreads. But Nicholas J. Johnson, there's only me and one other guy. So also, I'm kind of pretentious, so the J is quite nice. I did an interview on ABC... a statewide drive a few years ago, and they asked me, what does the J stand for? And then before I could answer, she said, wait, we'll have a phone-in competition. And I had to sit through 20 minutes of people going, oh, is it Jebediah? Is it James? And then someone eventually rang and said, I don't think he has a middle name. I think he just put it there because he's pretentious. And they took home an ABC bumper sticker and a Sea Change soundtrack from 1997, so... That's nice. So it should be very clear from that introduction that I am not a scientist. In fact, I'm probably about as far from a scientist as you can possibly get. I'm the opposite of a scientist. I spend my days either fooling people as a magician or surrounding myself with con artists and scams and tricksters. I basically spend my days up to my elbows in bullshit. That is what I do. And I think it is for that reason that I love science so much. Because to me, science is a chance to sort of put all of that aside and focus on what we know and what we can prove rather than what we believe or what we can convince people. Science doesn't really care about your feelings or your opinions. You can't persuade science to sort of follow you down your way of thinking. Science, obviously, as we all know, is about empirical evidence. So tonight I've decided, sort of in honour of that, since I'm not a scientist, I wanted to talk about someone who is also not a scientist. He was an amateur, a man. He did have a name that sounded like he was a scientist. His name was Charles Dawson, which... three separate people, when I have said that name to, have said, oh, you mean Darwin? I'm like, no, Charles Dawson. He's like an off-brand Charles Darwin. He's like the Palsonic of scientists. He was actually born in the late 19th century, about 5 years after the publication of Origin of the Species, which meant that he grew up in a time at which that particular work was in the forefront of the scientific community. Everyone was interested in Darwin's ideas and whether more evidence could be found to prove Darwin correct, or obviously in the case of people who didn't support his claims, incorrect. And in particular, that meant that there were people in the scientific community focusing on finding the missing link. Now, I must admit that I actually had quite sketchy knowledge of what the missing link actually was. It's, to me, basically the missing link is a character in a Gary Larson Far Side cartoon. That was my image. It was like a single guy wearing a saber-toothed tiger pelt and carrying a club, making a quip in a New Yorker cartoon. Like, that was my idea of what the missing link was. So I've had to actually learn specifically what it is from a scientific standpoint for tonight. It is not a real thing. The missing link is not a... It is a layman's term that's been used to encapture a larger idea. Essentially, what it refers to is the last human chimp common ancestor. So the last time that you saw both chimp and human characteristics in the same species before they separated into both, I think, Pan and Homo. And so the idea for me, again, was still this idea that, oh, we'll just find the fossil, we'll find the missing link, that one species. But because there are obviously so many different species of the early human and early chimp, the exact definition of what that is actually stretches 9 million years. So we have 9 million years to work with in actually finding this missing link. And even today, there are still people who argue about exactly what counts as the missing link and what doesn't count as the missing link. So in the time of, to think of it the way, it's the idea, you know, that argument that people always have about the exact moment that a fetus becomes a human being, or like when does a storm become a cyclone, or when does a joke become a dad joke? Like, what is the... Actually, science has answered that. A joke becomes a dad joke when the punchline becomes apparent. Apparent. A parent. I have a 3-year-old and I am teaching her just enough so that she hates me for that joke. Then I know my job is complete. So anyway, in Dawson's lifetime, scientists were not necessarily having those arguments. They were really just looking for any sort of fossil, any sort of evidence of this missing link, which meant that there were a lot of people that grew up interested in fossicking. There were people who would spend their weekends going out into previously unattended fields and ditches and forests and dig for fossils. And Charles Dawson was one of those. He was a lawyer by trade, so during the week he would practice law, and he had absolutely no scientific training whatsoever, but that didn't stop him from heading out and spending his weekends digging for fossils. And he was near his home. He was from Sussex, I should say, in the United Kingdom. So he basically went all over Sussex and the United Kingdom looking for various fossils. And he was extraordinarily good at it. What he would do is basically not just look for them himself, but he would make connections with the local farmers, miners, excavators, builders, anyone who carried a shovel. He would talk to them and tell them the sorts of things that he was after. So he had this network of informants all over the county, all over the country, in fact, who would come to him first when they found something interesting. And he would basically have these little informal digs with his friends where they would start looking for things. He discovered three different new species. He discovered a mammal, and you have to excuse my pronunciation of these. If we have any paleontologists who would like to heckle, now's the time to do it. The Plagiolax dawsoni, which was a new mammal that he had discovered, a new dinosaur, Iguanodon dawsoni, and a new plant, Salaganella dawsoni. So all of these he discovered, all from obviously different areas and different types of life, and he discovered them. But he wasn't just a paleontologist. He also discovered brick stamps that proved that Romans had occupied a castle in Sussex, which previously there'd been no evidence that they had been there at all, but he discovered these bricks that were stamped. He also discovered a Roman statue in Beauport Park that was made of cast iron. And up until that point, it wasn't known whether Romans of that particular era used cast iron, and he was able to provide an actual Roman statue that was made of cast iron. And so just that one discovery changed what we knew about Roman art, about the metals that were used, and of course the methods that they were using to build things. So it was an extraordinarily important discovery from just a guy, just a lawyer. My favourites, he also discovered a Neolithic stone axe and an ancient timber boat. So all of these things he did without any sort of scientific training. He did them just with his, you know, by rolling up his sleeves and giving it a try. For his trouble, he was elected a fellow of the Society of Antiquities in London. The British Museum conferred upon him the title of Honorary Collector, which doesn't actually sound that good, does it? Like, that sounds like a 10-year-old who's gone to the British Museum. You're right. They knelt down and put a sticker on him and ruffled his head a little bit. But he was also a fellow of the Geological Society and also helped found the Hastings and St. Leonard's Museum Association. So he was just a regular guy who did not make any money from this. He was never paid in any way, but he cared about exploration and he cared about discovery. However, his most famous discovery came in 1912. Around 4 years earlier, some farmers had come to him with some bone fragments that they thought might be of interest to him. He took them to Arthur Smith Woodward, who is the keeper of geology at the Natural History Museum, which is a much better title than, isn't it? I am the keeper of geology. If it weren't for me, geology would be... It's just behind there, but I'm holding it back. And so the two of them became fast friends, and they decided that they would go and dig in this small town, very, very close, in fact, to where Dawson lived. And they began digging on this site together. So 4 years later, after excavating, different scientists were coming and going, different volunteers were helping. One day, Dawson discovered some bone fragments. It was a skull and a jaw, and when they were reconstructed, they discovered that the teeth were roughly the same roughly the same position as those of a chimp, but they were flat like a human's. The jaw was similar to a chimpanzee's, but then the skull was closer to a human. And even just looking at this, Arthur Woodward knew that this could be that missing link, that thing that they had been looking for. Now, they could tell, obviously, from the fact that it was all found in the same place and that it had the same coloration, that it was that they all belonged together, and they were able to basically, using what they knew of the area, and get some plaster and basically put together a skull. They took that to the Geological Society, where it was decided that it was around 500,000 years old, and after much discussion, they agreed that this was, in fact, the missing link. So just a regular lawyer from Sussex discovered the missing link. The name that it was given was Eonthropus Dawsoni, always Dawsoni. I noticed that. He always had his name on the end, or Darwin's Dawn Man. And to me, what I love about the story at this point is that the scientists were forced to accept someone who just rolled up their sleeves and gave it a go. He didn't find these things in spite of being an amateur. He found them because he was an amateur, because he wasn't constricted by funding or job titles or scientific disciplines. He could be a paleontologist one day or a biologist the next. He could be a historian, an archaeologist, a botanist, or a geologist. He could basically be whatever he wanted to be, because there was no one to stop him. The word amateur, as you probably know, comes from the Latin for the love of. Professionals do it for money. Amateurs, we do it for the love of. And I always think of the amateur astronomer who can go out and look at the sky and name all the stars and tell you what they all mean, whereas a professional is less likely to be able to do that because they've got important work to do. And because of that, the amateurs are the ones who are often finding the new stars and new planets in the sky. So it was because he was an amateur who was able to discover it and change the way we thought about archaeology. Sadly, he passed away about 4 years later and didn't get to see the new discoveries that were found over the coming decades. And every new discovery made Dawson's Dawn Man more extraordinary, because when you compared the two, these new discoveries with old ones, it made the line they'd sort of drawn of what evolution meant zigzag in weird directions, and there's arguments about what did this mean, how does this compare to Darwin's Dawn Man, until finally in 1953 a group of British scientists were able to actually test the skull using a new fluorine based technique, and they actually discovered that the skull fragments were not 500,000 years old. They were 50,000 years old. And then when they tested the jawbone, they discovered it was 50 years old. And when they looked a little bit closer, they realized that the little scratched marks on the teeth were not caused by gnashing or any of the things they thought. The little marks on the teeth were caused by someone filing down a chimpanzee's teeth. They looked even closer and saw dental putty had held the teeth in place in various places, and that the jawbone had been treated with various chemicals to make it look like it was the same age as the rest of the skull. Darwin's Dawn Man was a complete fraud. It was not real at all. It was a complete and utter scam. In fact, when they looked recently, they actually looked at the skull fragments even closer and discovered that it wasn't one skull. It was actually three different people and a chimpanzee all put together to make this one thing. And of course, when they put the skull together, because it was different people, that made it look all the more extraordinary. They couldn't quite... How does it fit together? And in fact, the jaw hinge, the man here where it actually links, where there would have been evidence, that had been smashed just so that you couldn't see where the skull would have connected to the jaw. It was a chimpanzee and three dead guys. So this obviously made the papers and people started to discuss it more. And over the years, there's been a lot of discussions about it and a lot of research. In 2003, there was a study showed that 38 of Charles Dawson's previous discoveries were also forgeries. 38. So this was not a case of the skull, which, I should say at this point, the name of it is the Piltdown Man, is its more common name for those who haven't heard of it, who have heard of it. It wasn't just that this was like a one-off hoax. The Piltdown Man, this was the finale of a lifetime of work. This was his big moment in the sun. Yeah? Everything had been working to this point. It started off small and then bang! It just blew it away. And what is crazy is when you look back, this is not something where the scientists were all in agreement and went, well, science, let's move on. There were people from the beginning who looked at it and went, nah, that's three dudes and a chimpanzee. There was Garrett Smith Miller, Marcelin Bull and David Waterson all publicly stated in the 12 months after it was discovered, that is fake, I know a chimpanzee when I see one. And yet they were ignored, no one believed them. So the question I asked, well, hang on, now, how does an amateur do this? How does he get the knowledge to be able to do this? And there are people who have suggested he did not work alone. And that we now have a rogues gallery of suspects of who was it who helped Charles Dawson do it. So first of all, Arthur Woodward, right, the geologist, the keeper of geology. Now, the first person you would assume, he was the person who presented it to the scientific community. However, he was known to be trustworthy. There was no evidence of fraud at all on his part. And he was so passionate about this that it seems impossible to believe that he would had been involved. However, he did have an assistant, a man by the name of Martin Hinton, who people are a little bit more suspect of, particularly when in 1970 a trunk of his was found in the British Museum, and in the bottom were some bone fragments that had been treated with the exact same chemicals as the Piltdown Man's chimpanzee jaw. So did Martin Hinton help Charles Dawson in order to scam his boss, or to help his boss give him what he wanted? In fact, there was another man who was there on the day that Piltdown Man was discovered, and I apologise to any French speakers. He was a French Jesuit priest by the name of Pierre Théhard de Chardin. Good? Okay, excellent. Basically, this was at a time at which the Catholic Church, in particular, was very much involved in cosmology and the idea, you know, we can look at the stars and say, what does it mean? The church felt like they were also in charge of what the stars mean. The heavens was their responsibility. And so you had a lot of priests who were also interested in science. And in fact, when He was present there on the day. He was also completely committed to evolution and absolutely committed to the idea of evolution and thought that the missing link was going to be found. So you have someone who is a Jesuit priest who is quite happy to talk a lot of bullshit about the stars. Was he also prepared to help make this skull talk another type of bullshit to try and get people interested in the idea of evolution? Or was it him working with, this is another theory, him working with Minton to mess with Dawson, who was in fact innocent, but they knew about the other 38 frauds and they wanted to scam the scammer. Now, why would they do that? Well, they would do that with the help of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes, who lived 10 miles from the Piltdown site, had met Charles Dawson on several occasions, and was known to play golf on the Piltdown site. So did the three of them team up to mess with Dawson, or did any of them individually help Dawson, or did perhaps he do it by himself? There are still people arguing. There was a recent article in the paper that said, no, Charles Dawson worked alone because all of the techniques were the same. But every time that comes up, there are other people who point out that, and this is my favourite conspiracy theory, was that the Jesuit priest was in fact an atheist trying to bring down the Catholic Church from the inside. So there are still people actually figuring out how it worked, Charles Dawson did this. Dawson was pretty clearly involved. There are also people trying to figure out who else helped him. But I think the big question is, why did he do it? Now, the cynical answer comes from 2003, Dr. Miles Russell noted, and this is what he said, Dawson's whole academic career appears to have been built upon deceit, sleight of hand, fraud and deception, the ultimate gain being international recognition. Now, I don't like that, firstly because I am someone who has built their career upon deceit, sleight of hand, with the goal of international recognition, but also I don't see that as Dawson's gain, because there was so much passion in what he did. So I guess I like to think, and I have no evidence for this, but after that story, who needs evidence? I like to think that Charles Dawson did all of that because at his heart, he was an amateur. I think that he pulled off the Piltdown Man for the love of it. Thank you very much. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson, and this has been Scammapalooza.